Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. I'm having a terrific conversation today with my guest, Mr. Fabian Calvo. And Fabian, great stuff in the last segment. If listeners want to learn more about your work, what would you have them do?
Yeah, well, for my economic and entrepreneurship, geopolitic commentary, they can go to Fabian4Liberty.com. That's Fabian4Liberty.com. And for everything on my real estate company, basically, it's thenotehouse.us.
All right. Well, I encourage listeners to check that out. Fabian, we were talking in the last segment about the dollar losing reserve status. And for some of our listeners maybe who don't understand exactly what that means, could you explain what would losing reserve status actually mean? And then more importantly, maybe, what would be the consequences for our average listener out there trying to accumulate a nest egg and maybe retire someday?
It's a great question, Dennis. And this is what I mean by fundamental changes. And briefly, I'll just talk about how we've already seen fundamental changes happening. We'll see many more of them in industries. You know, take the record industry. It's completely transformed over just the last 10 years. Or take the cab industry with Uber, completely revolutionizing how that industry is working. And really, it's no difference with the U.S. dollar, which I believe is an outdated 20th century currency system. You know, now if basically you're Brazil, or, you know, if you're in Germany and you want to buy some tires, let's say, from Brazil, well, basically you need to take your euros, convert them to dollars, and use that as a means for global trade. It's a world reserve currency, which many of your listeners likely know. And what that does is it creates a tremendous amount of demand for the U.S. dollar, and that demand props up the value of the dollar, keeping prices of commodities and prices of things at Walmart and, you know, at the grocery store, relatively inexpensive when compared to the rest of the world. Well, look, you know, in 1945, England lost its world reserve currency. No one would have ever thought that possible 10 years prior to that, but it happened. And, you know, now there's all kinds of the World Bank, many other top, you know, the Financial Times of London, all of them have been coming up with article after article how at the end of this year, the U.S. economy will be surpassed by the Chinese economy. And this is a real important point, Dennis, because England, or the U.S. actually surpassed, the U.S. actually surpassed England as the largest economy in the world in 1870. It took about 75 years for them to then have the world reserve currency. Well, today things move much, much faster. And so now we have China becoming, quickly becoming the number one economy of the world. How much longer will it take for that dollar to lose its world reserve currency? And when it does, you'll likely see prices for everything you shop for increase by double, maybe even triple. You know, no one knows because no one's ever lived through an economy as large as the U.S. losing its world reserve currency status. And that's why I would, you know, at least for me personally, I could only tell you what I do is I'm a proponent of gold and silver. I'm a proponent of hard assets like real estate, and really not, you know, the old adage of diversifying. Well, that's usually diversifying in dollar denominated assets. I think we got to just think completely differently.
So, Fabian, give me your take on what happens when the Fed actually quits printing as we're recording this next month. One, is that going to be the catalyst that triggers a stock market decline? And I guess a second follow-up question to that would be, as soon as we do get an economic slowdown, what other strategy does the Fed have they can implement, and are they going to start printing again?
Yeah, well, I would. The Fed is still printing, and I don't necessarily buy into or believe any talk of a taper. I think instead what they've done is what we saw just late last year with basically, in essence, the Fed was laundering over $100 billion of T-bill purchases through Belgium. Basically, in the month of November, Belgium bought about 40% of its gross domestic product in treasuries. I mean, it's completely ridiculous. Most people don't, you know, don't get that, or it's kind of the smoke and mirrors. The point is that I think, you know, that the Fed will keep printing, and I also think that, you know, over the next couple of years, we're likely going to see the Dow Jones hit 20,000. We're going to see the real estate market go absolutely crazy, and when we do see the dollar lose, when we see, you know, what's often referred to as a dollar collapse, or I would call it a dollar shock, we'll likely see all of the bubbles simultaneously burst. Now, I personally believe, and based on my contacts, they believe this as well in Wall Street, that, you know, I think the Fed is already coordinating with other central banks around the world for this demise of the dollar. And whether or not the dollar ends up going into a basket of currencies as the world reserve currency, or whether it's the Chinese currency or some other currency out there, maybe the IMF SDR currency, that's not really a currency, but it can be used in payment systems. I mean, that's for anyone's guess. So, but I think that, you know, at this end of the road life cycle, we continue to see markets like the Dow, like the real estate market, continue to dramatically go up higher before the big crash that I think is likely 3, 4, 5 years away.
So let me ask you, Fabian, because I've had guests on the program, and my study has led me to believe that I think there's a pretty good possibility that we see a deflationary cycle, given that private sector debt levels are at record highs. In fact, I think 50% higher than at the beginning of the Great Depression when measured as a percentage of the U.S. economy. What's your take on the possibility for deflation moving ahead versus maybe inflation, which sounds like you're maybe predicting, and how do you reconcile those two views?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I think that short term, we very likely, when the crash does happen, there'll be a panic. We could likely see deflation. It'll only give the Fed even more of a catalyst. And you know, I think actually, to be completely honest, I think before we even have this economic shock to the U.S. economy, we're likely going to enter some kind of large war that will give the Fed and give central banks this legitimacy, if you will, to print even more money to fight whatever boogeyman enemy they've basically created. So I think that's actually where this ends up going. But look, when it comes to inflation, you know, several months back we learned that central banks around the world pumped in $29 trillion into the global stock market, with more than half of that going into the Dow Jones. And so I just see this unprecedented amount of money creation and credit expansion like we've never seen before. And the only, again, what's important for people to understand is that the only way they could keep with this infinite growth paradigm is by creating, expanding credit and printing more money. And, you know, just as a student of history, Dennis, everywhere that I've seen this happen before, it ends in a currency destruction. And I think it's no different here.
So, Fabian, let's talk about real estate, since that's your specialty. Certainly, we've seen a rebound in the real estate market. To what extent has this rebound in the real estate market been really linked to the fact that the Fed has kept interest rates low? I think the federal government is now directly or indirectly involved in 9 out of 10 new mortgages, and a big chunk of the money the Fed's been printing has been used to buy mortgage-backed securities. Is this real estate recovery fake in your mind also?
Totally fake, totally manipulated. And here's where it stems from, is that when prices hit their lows in 2008, we saw Wall Street basically get 0% lines of credit in the billions of dollars to basically go out and buy real estate, distressed real estate, from Fannie Mae and from other lenders at record unprecedented rates, where today they're the largest landlord in America. And, you know, I've been talking about this since the beginning of 2012. It's really what I come to call a pump and dump of the real estate market. Right now we're in this pump phase, and we see the big speculators on Wall Street, all the big billionaires on Wall Street. You know, John Paulson owns one of the largest hedge funds in America. Recently, him and another top hedge fund guy have invested $500 million into Realogy, who owns Century 21, Remax, Sotheby International. Warren Buffett's company just bought Prudential, its real estate wing. So we see this pump of the market. We see this collusion between really the media, Wall Street, and in government to prop up prices. You know, the media is already pumping up the real estate market, talking about how it's a great time to buy, take advantage of the low rates. All of this nonsense that we just saw 6 years ago is being repeated. Now, after the midterm elections, and we're already seeing this now, we're going to begin to see no money down loans come back roaring. I mean, look at, for example, GM car sales, as you may know, and the audience may know, Dennis, they're basically 80% of their sales were subprime car loans. Anybody who walks on the lot, fogs up a mirror, drives away in basically a brand new GM car. Well, they're going to do the same thing with real estate. And I think this is all going to end, again, in this multi-bubble collapse of housing, of stocks, of bonds, of student debt. All of these bubbles are going to come to an end eventually. But again, at the end of this road of the economic cycle we're currently in, they're going to pump this up as much as they can. So after the midterm election, you're going to really see no money down loans take off.
So, Fabian, let's go back, because you did allude to the media, and certainly I have my beliefs on the mainstream media, and it just seems to me that there's not really such thing as real news reporting anymore, and I know you have some opinions on that. Could you share them with the listeners?
Certainly. I mean, you know, look, we see CNBC's ratings at an all-time low. I think people are hopefully beginning to realize that the media are manipulators. It's a, you know, I don't have anything against, I'm a complete free market capitalist, but however, we have complete crony capitalism today, and it's ever present in the media complex, if you will. I mean, most of the media is controlled by about five corporations. It's a scripted, you know, message that is being sent out, where basically we're in this economic recovery that, you know, they're in essence not telling the American people the truth about really anything, whether it's about you know, what's happening in Ukraine with the Russians, whether it's what's happening in the Middle East with ISIS, and it's all just propaganda. And the truth is, you know, the average person out there that's, you know, focused on their job, if they have one, or on their kids, or whatever it may be, they might watch 5 minutes or 10 minutes of news a day, and, you know, look at what's dominating the headlines. Some NFL player that beat up his wife, which really, to me at least, seems like it happens every month, or, you know, Dancing with the Stars or whatever it may be. That's where people's attention is, and there's a reason why television is called programming. And I think that it's important for people to listen to shows like yours, Dennis, and others to really break out of that programming. You know, one of the things I wrote a book about the global economic reset that I released several months back, and as we were doing the research for it, it was interesting. We found that through all of these economic collapses that happened in the past, or currency collapses, that, you know, about 60% of the population got totally wiped out. I mean, completely wiped out. And then there was the 1%, roughly 1% of 1%, that, they, you know, it didn't matter what happens, they're going to do well. But there was about another 25% or so that actually did okay. They survived, and some of them actually prospered. And these weren't people that were rich or really wealthy, but what they did have going for them is that they were more awake as to what was happening. They were realistic, and they had expectations about where the economies were going, where world events were going. And I think this really classifies people that expose themselves to shows like yours, to different opinions out there about what the real state of the economy is, what the real state of the world is.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Our guest today has been Mr. Fabian Calvo. And Fabian, we certainly appreciate you being with us today.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, Dennis.
And thanks again to our special guest on both podcasts this week, Mr. Fabian Calvo, for joining us. You know, I want to zero in again on a couple things Fabian discussed in the last segment. He talked about the fact that printing, money printing, that is, and easy money cause bubbles. In fact, Fabian said, and I certainly agree, that bubbles always burst, and he believes now that we're on a path where we're going to see a multi-bubble crash at some time in the future. In fact, Fabian said that, in his estimation, 3 to 5 years. Now, certainly picking the top of a bubble is very, very difficult. In fact, one of the most interesting comments on a bubble that I've ever heard was, I think, put forth by John Hussman, chair of Hussman Funds. And he said that bubbles have a way of making everybody look like an idiot. You look like an idiot because you get out too soon, or you look like an idiot because you stay in too long. Now, certainly I believe that Fabian's correct. In my view, certainly we are seeing multiple bubbles now that are building, and they're building as a result of the easy money policies that have been put in place by the Federal Reserve since 2008. And again, the easy money policies are simply the Fed has kept interest rates near zero since the financial crisis. Easy money abounds. In fact, as Fabian said in the last segment, he expects that no money down loans will come back. And certainly no money down loans in real estate contributed significantly to the last financial crisis. Fabian also pointed out that 80% of GM car borrowers are now borrowing money to buy cars, and they're all subprime borrowers. Well, what does that mean? Well, that means they're borrowers that don't have great credit. Well, in order for a bubble to exist, easy credit also has to exist. In order for a bubble to build, easy credit has to be available. It's got to be easy for folks to go out and borrow money. So bubbles are inflated by easy credit and easy money. Now, if you're skeptical that a bubble might exist presently, think about this statistic that Fabian gave us in the last segment. $29 trillion has moved from central banks to stock markets, with half of that going to the Dow Jones Industrial Average. That's easy money. And is that fueling a bubble? Well, in this segment, I want to talk about the characteristics of a bubble. And you hear the term bubble all the time, but what does that really mean? What does the term bubble mean when it's used in the terms of finance? Well, in its simplest form, a bubble refers to a situation where the price for an asset class exceeds its fundamental value by a large margin. So essentially, for a bubble to exist, you have to have market participants suspend their prior beliefs, suspend their prior valuation methodologies. So when a bubble exists, there's easy money available, and this easy money flows into the market because the market participants don't recognize that valuations are way out of whack. Now, if you think back to the tech stock bubble, many of you probably had money in the stock market in the mid to late 1990s. You could literally put money anywhere in the stock market and make money. And some of the tech stocks had valuations that were ridiculous. You had companies that weren't earning any profit selling for unbelievably high prices. In fact, we see the same thing again today. There's technology companies now trading for 700 times earnings. Well, those valuations typically don't exist long term. So when there's a bubble, not only is it fueled by easy money, but you have to have most market participants say, wait a minute, the prior rules don't apply. This is a new game. And all these folks typically, after the crash occurs, go back and in hindsight, because hindsight is 20/20, say, you know, that was a bubble. However, there's been a crash in the meantime. In fact, if you look at the housing bubble, we had banks that held subprime mortgages. They loaned money to people that, realistically speaking, weren't very creditworthy. They probably shouldn't have been borrowing the money in the first place. As a result, the 12 largest financial institutions in the world had lost half their value, and the real estate market, which had been red hot, collapsed. Same thing happened back, and many of you have heard of Dutch tulip mania. And this is probably the yardstick by which a lot of speculative bubbles are measured. There was a complete disconnect at the time between the fundamental value of a tulip and the price that folks were getting. In fact, over a 7-year time frame, professional growers in Holland became increasingly willing to pay higher prices for tulips. And tulips were selling for more than 10 times the annual income of a skilled craftsman. And in February of 1637, it all came tumbling down. The bubble crashed, and within months, tulips were selling for 1/100th of their peak prices. They lost 99% of their value. The stock market bubble that peaked in 1929 saw the Dow Jones Industrial Average lose 90% of its value. Arguably, Federal Reserve policies implemented in the late 19-teens, reducing the backing of the U.S. dollar by gold by 40% down from 100%, had all this easy money flowing into the stock market. You could borrow money to buy stocks. You only had to maintain 10% equity in your account. And the bubble built, and the bubble subsequently burst. So when you look at bubbles, there's an economist who's not really a household name. His name was Hyman Minsky. He passed away in 1996. But he said any bubble cycle has five parts. There's first displacement. There's then a boom period. There's then euphoria. There's then profit-taking. And there's then a panic. And the first step, he said, is displacement. And displacement occurs when investors say, the new rules don't apply anymore. They displace the old valuation rules, and they say, you know, this is a whole new game. That happened, as I said, in the 1990s with the technology stocks. This whole new internet technology is going to revolutionize things. We don't need to worry about earnings. We've got a whole new paradigm. We're going to displace, or the investors displaced the old valuation measures. Then, after prices start to rise slowly, they gain momentum. You enter a boom phase. Good example of a boom phase presently. Corporate earnings went up about 3% or so last year, and the stock market went up 30%. That could be described as the boom phase of the bubble. There's then the euphoria phase. Asset prices skyrocket, and folks really don't pay attention to whatever the cost is, whatever the valuation is. They just want to get in before it's too late. In fact, if you go back and take a look at the real estate bubble in Japan that burst in 1989, land in Tokyo sold as much for $139,000 a square foot, or 350 times the value of Manhattan property. Bubbles do burst, and in Japan and the real estate market, they burst as well. Real estate lost about 80% of its value. Then there's profit taking. The smart money usually jumps out first. John Maynard Keynes, not my favorite economist, did have an interesting saying about how long markets can stay irrational. He said, markets can stay irrational longer than you can stay solvent. Then you enter the panic stage. Prices reverse, and they descend as rapidly as they ascend. Bubbles, when you chart price bubbles, tend to be symmetrical. Well, Fabian in the last segment said that what we have going on now in the stock market, the real estate market, and the U.S. dollar market is a pump and dump. Subprime mortgages are back. No money down mortgages are back. Subprime borrowers are borrowing money to buy cars with no money down. We believe that, as Fabian does, that we may be in a bubble, and we believe that we're in a bubble that may be unlike any other bubble we've seen in the past. We talk about the economy, bubbles, when bubbles burst, what the consequences might be for you and your money, and give you specific strategies to consider in our free Investors Discovery Kit. If you'd like to get your free Discovery Kit, all you have to do is go to investingapproach.com and let us know where to mail it. It is educational in nature, and we'd encourage you to go to the website investingapproach.com and request yours. That's our podcast for this week. On next week's two podcasts, I have the chief economic commentator with the Financial Times in London, Mr. Martin Wolf, joining me. You won't want to miss those podcasts. That's it for this week. Thanks for listening.